Blog Talk Radio.
It's the V-Spot. I'm your host, Dr. Vic Tater. My co-host is Bill Foster. V-Spot Radio is brought to you by Planet Vic Tater Blog Network. Get everything you need and a few things you truly do not want. Only at Planet Vic Tater. All right, we're on the air right now, in spite of the fact that I'm dying or doped up or something. With me, as always, is my associate, Neil Foster.
Hey, hey.
And my Latino correspondent, Miguel Garza.
Ahoy, ahoy.
All right, so anyway, I was telling Neil I'm kind of sick, but I said I can't let my sponsors down.
Sponsor being you, and you alone.
Yes, I owe too much to me. Okay, so a lot of stuff has happened in the last month. Well, for us, anyway. Dallas came back after a scary 16 years. Or is it 21 years?
What are you deeming it?
Ooh, man. Anyway, it's come back. Mike, what did you think of the first episode?
I loved it. I loved it so much, in fact, that I took notes. Would it be all right if I briefly went through these notes?
Go ahead.
All right. Let's see. Everyone dancing in oil is quite odd. Bobby being the brave, quiet one will certainly suck. Don't like the new intro. The individual pictures of the cast are essential. The evolution
I agree
of the
with
Dallas
that.
Theme song. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, you can't have, you know, just the random names thrown up there. You have to have the, you know, and I'm sure as hopefully starting next season they'll have that. Another thing,
No, you can continue.
Okay, the evolution of the Dallas theme song. Now, if you go back and watch the first few seasons, you know, it was right at the dying days of disco. So the bass riff
yeah.
was kind of heavy. It's kind of like the banner. Yeah, now it's like totally toned down. I mean, you can't even hardly hear it. Kind of sad.
And then when it got to the 80s, it had the synthesizer, the drum synthesizer.
Yeah, and it was just, you know, one or two seasons away from it being a dubstep version.
That's my joke. I'll kill you.
Special guest.
Okay,
star.
So what did you think of Christopher and John Rawls?
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned that because one of my notes on here was Christopher and John Ross won't be as bad as I thought it would. Initially, I was skeptical, but especially when I saw that they were casting Jesse Metcalf, and you know what? I'm totally okay with being wrong on this because both of them have really lived up to the advanced billing.
I thought that John Rawls finally came together last week.
You know, the only thing I don't like about John Ross is he has to work on his JR smirk. Other than that, he's got it down.
Yeah, one thing about last week was you got the ideal that he was actually related to JR.
Yes, that was the first time there was absolutely no doubt that who his daddy was.
One point somebody made was that the big difference between John Ross and JR was that JR had a mentor in Jock.
Yeah, John Ross has been flying blind, you know, pretty much his whole life.
Yeah, he's just been having to figure out how to do shit.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, like he busted into the house on his own, and I had the idea that if Ann had shot him with the shotgun, we'd have a much different show.
You know, that's the other thing I wrote. Ann goes through the trouble of loading the shotgun, telling the robber she doesn't miss at that range, and then doesn't shoot. What the hell?
You know, one thing I did like about Bobby in the show, as far as his relationship to John Rawls is, you get the feeling that he does love him. You know,
yeah,
like the way you would love a kid that you saw grow up?
Yeah, he wants to have a relationship with them, but he realizes that he just can't. Because at the end of the day, he is still his father's son.
Yeah, and he's just too messed up from stuff, and he can't really figure out what the hell he's doing. Did you see the episode when JR told the story about the blind horse?
Was that this week?
No, that was about 2 weeks ago. JR was shaving John Ross.
Oh, yeah. And it's like straight out of Godfather.
I hate the fact that you haven't seen last night, when this week's episode, because there were some great lines in this episode.
Yeah, I just got back from vacation, so I'm going to watch it tonight, probably.
Yeah, one of the only problems, and again, there's not a lot of problems with characterization. They're pretty spot on with Bobby and JR.
Yeah, I mean,
and
it's
I don't know if that's because the showrunner knows her shit, or if that's because Larry Hagman and Patrick Duffy are keeping a close eye on it.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, because I don't think you could, even with their input, unless you sat there and watched a lot of Dallas, there's a lot of things that they just the writing would not be able to pick up unless they had some, you know, some background with Dallas.
The only problem I have with JR is I feel like he's a little too spiteful toward Miss Ellie.
Yeah, because I mean, you remember how many times he went out of his way to defend her, even or to not, you know, upset her, and you know, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, he loved his daddy more, but he still loved his mom. You know, I don't think he would have allowed a book to go out. I don't think he would have ever have allowed something like that to happen, but it's a very minor thing, and he's rationalizing it.
Exactly. Yeah, in his mind, he's just trying to get South Fork back. JR, the only thing I don't really like about him is that his eyebrows look like they're trying to fly away from his face.
He looks like a wizard.
That's a good call. I didn't even think of that.
But, you know, Dallas really does feel more like high fantasy epic fantasy than it does a business show.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you've got all the character archetypes and everything of a fantasy show. You've got, like, the...
Yeah, it's like, you know, you have your different factions. You know, like, you even have your elder gods that you never, ever mess with.
Yep.
One of the things was, let me see if I can remember what it was, because, oh yeah, I like JR bribing the old guy. He just gave this old man a steak.
Yeah.
Neil had a good quip this week, and it won't spoil anything, but basically, you know, Anne kind of finds out what a asshole JR is, and Neil was like this, there really is a JR?
That's a good one. Yeah, I mean, it's like...
Well, speaking of high fantasy, it's basically like, you know, I thought this was just a myth. Who dare tell about the great mighty troll that JR is?
I'm trying to remember what it was.
I watched this episode. Did you also have the problem with the fact that when they focus on the new characters, it's kind of very bland?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of felt that way at first, but I think, like, now that you were kind of a little more invested in the characters.
What did you think of the two new girls?
Okay. For a while there, it took me a while to figure out which one was which, and I was able to narrow it down. Christopher's wife is the one with the huge scar between her eyes that I cannot not focus on every time she's in the scene. But, you know, I've kind of gotten used to them.
I knew the difference because I remembered her from Veronica Mars, and the other one, Elena, was in Fast and Furious and The Faculty.
Did you know Elena is currently living in Ray Kreb's house on South Fork?
So that's where she's living at. Is that the original house or the one he built?
I'm pretty sure it's the one he built.
Well... to get back to one of my first complaints about the first episode and one of the later ones, I understand you can't have Ray take over the show because he's not a regular. And they're already past the federal limit of old people. But I feel like they didn't give Ray enough to do in the first episode.
Yeah, I mean, one scene. I mean, come on. And it was a throwaway scene at that. My notes I wrote on Ray and Lucy was, Ray and Lucy, God damn it. And then it just says, Lucy is the Ewing equivalent of Ellie Neidhart at this point.
I remember when you said that. I think you said that on Facebook or Twitter, and I laughed for about 10 minutes.
It's true, dude. She's too precious to eat a salad.
One of the things about Ray was, you know, I think he would have had more of an opinion about Bobby selling the ranch.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I can understand why they wouldn't involve him in it, but at the same time, you figured Bobby would have the courtesy to pick up the phone.
Oh, by the way, I'm selling the place you grew up.
Yeah. Yeah,
I told Eric,
you know, that
after
place where daddy ran for years and years, that you ran for years and years. Yeah, we're going to sell it.
Some Japanese people, I don't know. Surely they're not a Venezuelan oil and Venezuelan oil company or anything.
One of the things they wrote down was apparently Bobby wasn't fond of Pam or any of his other wives, or wasn't fond enough of them to carve their names into the tree.
I have a feeling that there's actually two different trees where he carved their name and he made them think that they were the only one.
Or it's on the other side of the tree.
Yeah, it's like, no, baby, it's only for you. I was watching the wedding episode when Ray and Lucy came back. I honestly got the feeling they're just shacking up now in Europe.
They just don't care at this point. Like, you know what?
They fought it for so long. I mean, I feel like I said with Ray, you know, I feel like that kind of cracked Ray's mind when he found out.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and he's
been trying desperately.
Like
I said, he looked so awkward trying to raise a teenage girl.
Well, you know, I mean, raising one is not exactly what he was used to.
That's one of these things, Joe. So you kind of, I mean, I don't know if I'm putting that into the scene or they were, because I always felt like that they did acknowledge the Ray and Lucy thing on like a sub, like a meta level.
Yeah, it's more like a nod-ish level.
One of the things I liked was JR had this great line where he said, where he told somebody, he said, my friends are in the state house. My enemies are going to be a little harder to find. What about that guy, Cliff Barnes? Isn't he by the southern half of Africa? Shut up.
Yeah, seriously. Isn't Cliff just, you know, like bawling ridiculous now? I mean, come on, JR. Not all of your enemies are dead.
Would it be a spoiler if we told him that one line that Bobby had in the latest episode?
I'd rather not.
Oh, okay.
JR was talking about he'd made some move, and he said, Daddy always said, don't trust Bree Woman. And Bobby just said very plainly, yes, I remember everything Daddy said. Bobby just looks like a guy that doesn't give a fuck anymore.
You know, when you find out you're possibly dying, and you find out that your brother, who has faked so many, you know, illnesses over the year, was faking being clinically depressed for the last 20 years, yeah, you might kind of just check out mentally.
I kind of think that JR actually was clinically depressed and that something happened to snap him out of it.
Yeah, I really hope that's the case.
Because I don't think he was something like that. I think he just had so much shit happen to him, he just said, fuck it.
Yeah.
Is he becoming more like Craig from South Park, or is he becoming more like Stan after that You Growing Old episode?
Kind of like Stan. One of the things I thought was, I thought Christopher was a little dipshit toward Clea.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's like literally the only thing he has left, you know, linking him to his mother. You know, that's the one relative he has left on that side of the family, I'm assuming, that he keeps in contact with. You'd figure he was,
yeah,
you would think
he was doing something really bad, you know, and Cliff was being fairly pleasant. I did like when JR came in, and you remember the episode of The Simpsons with the creator of Itchy and Scratchy being a hobo?
Yeah.
And you know when he's fighting Grandpa across the table and he's like this, paint my chicken coop, make me, and they start fighting, and Marge says, one of them has to go, and Homer just plainly says, okay, Grandpa. That's what I was picturing with JR and Cliff fighting, that he would say, one of them has to go, and Bobby just says, okay, JR.
how crazy rich must Cliff be to be playing high-stakes Texas Hold'em and not even having to be in the room?
It's like, I don't even know how to play cards.
I just throw away a couple $1 million at this every night just for shits and giggles.
Yeah, I don't even care. You know, I could have JR killed just like that.
Another note I kept was, let me just read this real quick. Of course the Ewings still employ Mexicans.
They trust them.
At least now they're not all named Raul.
One of the things I didn't like about Elena was I didn't like how they were trying to shoehorn her into the history of the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I understand they had to come up with a story, but to kind of like, you know, it felt like they were kind of cramming that down our throats a little bit at the beginning.
Eric said that it was kind of like, you remember, you know, I don't know if you watched it, but on the fifth season of Buffy, when they added Michelle Trachtenberg and she'd been there all along.
It was just something you'd never noticed.
Yeah, I want to go back to clips of the old show, and they digitally put in Georgiana Brewster and all these scenes, like when Christopher almost shot John Rawls.
Just give it like the old George Lucas treatment.
Yeah, or when John Rawls was kidnapped by that terrorist.
Oh, just like, you know, have like a random things of like John Ross visiting former presidents.
Yeah, just all these things right here. One thing I was going to say, though, going back about the whole conflict, honestly, I think Miss Ellie would have rather drilled for oil than sell the ranch to strangers.
You know, if she was given the two choices, I almost guarantee that's probably what she would do. Especially if
yeah, because
she
was going to drill for oil when JR tried to put up the mortgage.
Yeah, when he...
So,
you know, if you kept a running tally of how many times JR almost cost the family South Fork, it would probably be in the dozens.
Yeah, I remember on one of the commentaries of the DVDs, Patrick Duffy said him and Larry Hagman had added up how much money JR had made and lost Ewing Oil, and they said that they were probably minus $5 billion. I don't even think JR likes making money. I think he just likes the fight.
He likes the grind. He doesn't really care what end he comes out on, just as long as he's in the fight.
Shit, even in the Dream season, when he got the company lock, stock, and barrel, the first thing he did was make a very risky, stupid investment.
Yeah, it's like the more balls and brains mentality, which is crazy because JR is easily the smartest guy on the show, and yet he's constantly doing the dumbest things.
And it's especially, you know, if Jock could barely keep him in line.
Yeah, if Jock Ewing can barely keep you on a leash, then what the hell chance does anybody else have? If the manliest man to ever live cannot control you, you're beyond control.
Yeah, can barely keep you in check.
Oh, man, that, you know, I understand why with the 12-episode season where they have to burn through so many things. But I really wish they would have given the Cattle Baron's Ball a little more time. I mean, the Cattle Baron's Ball.
Yeah.
The Oil Baron's Ball.
They were burning through too many twists for me in the first few episodes.
I mean, they had a lot of time to catch up on, but the Oil Baron's Ball needs to have at least one punch out. The only cool thing that happened was JR ditching his walker.
Yeah, I liked how JR is playing now on being an enfeebled old man.
It was really cool is how within 5 minutes of walking in, JR had managed to convince not just Bobby, but also Sue Ellen to forget an entire lifetime of him being a complete asshole.
Yeah, I liked how he didn't want Sue Ellen to see him weak.
Yeah.
He didn't care if he was trying to pull a con, but he didn't want her to see him weak.
Yep, he had to represent. It was even funnier, it was like a couple episodes later when he walks into Sue Ellen's office and Cliff is there. And the three of them, I'm looking at them going, oh, dear Lord. they're just all so old.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about how they're going to try to have her run for governor. And, you know, I would say normally her history would prevent that, but Texas has really lowered the bar on governors.
You know, it all depends on what bubble you fill in. If you're an R or a D, they'll forgive damn near anything if you fill in the right bubble in Texas.
The mysterious political parties of Dallas, you know, how Cliff, I remember back when I was watching season 11, I said, you know, Cliff's really changed. I think he's going to remember he's a Democrat.
You know, seriously, man, that's what big oil does to you.
Just kind of went insane. Well,
We got about one third of the podcast left. Should we talk about the other awesome 80s thing that we saw?
Oh, so, you know what came on DVD? No Holds Barred.
Went and bought it today. Haven't watched it yet.
I bought it the other night. And I'll be honest, because a lot of people say, you know, I like the movie, but I know it's not good. Here's the thing about it. If I love a movie, on some level, I think it's good.
You know, it's one of those things I'm almost afraid to watch it again. Because when I was a kid, I just remembered it being exactly what I thought a movie about wrestling would be like.
The only thing I would say is that the middle of it drags with the romantic shit.
Romantic shit. Yeah. There's a long period with Hulk Hogan's not on screen.
Yeah,
and
but
there's
when
also
you have,
long
like,
moments where you're seeing not even... who played it? I can't remember who played Zeus.
Tiny Lister. You know, I was telling somebody that if Zeus could have wrestled at all, you know, like if he could have just been as... if he could have wrestled as good as the Great Khali, he'd have been one of the biggest stars ever.
Oh, yeah, dude, with that look. Yeah,
I mean, he had such a charisma about him and a presence.
And the fact that they made money off of that program when he came in, despite him having absolutely zero ability at all, that shows just how absolutely hot the business was at that time. Because if you tried that now, you know, bringing in like some, you know, who would be like his contender? I wouldn't even say Terry Crews, because Terry Crews
I can't
probably...
Think of, yeah, because, well, I mean, Tiny Lister's so much bigger.
Yeah, I mean, there really isn't anybody comparable to him right now. But, you know...
I like to think that it was the Zeus from the movie that tore his way out of the movie into the real world, like New Nightmare. To kill Hulk Hogan and the... And when I was a kid, Zeus...
I'm still surprised it was basically a PG-13. I could have sworn it was a PG, maybe a hard PG, but just PG nonetheless.
You know, the thing I really enjoyed about the movie was it felt like they made an 80s action movie for kids without, I don't want this phrase to be taken on, with Dumbing It Down. You know, they always put kids in kids' movies.
Yeah.
In this case, though, they did an action movie, and as a kid, this is what I thought Hulk Hogan's life was probably like.
I just remember, you know, sitting there one night, Superstars used to come on here at Saturday nights, and I just remember watching it, and this was probably about maybe, I don't know, a month after I'd seen No Holds Barred in the theaters, and all of a sudden Zeus is sitting there, I was like, oh my, no, this can't be happening.
They didn't really, I mean, that was a very well done thing they did, because, you know, today they were trying to put Zeus in a 20-minute match with John Cena.
and with
here,
the
they did so much
running
to protect him by putting him with the Macho Man.
Yeah.
I wish the DVD had more extras on it, because they could have filled it with extras from Feud and probably still kept it on the same disc.
Oh, yeah, easily.
You know,
like
the thing that
the
got
cameos
on my nerves when I was watching SmackDown, they were doing this thing where you have John Cena and The Miz making these snide comments, and it's like, I wish to God one of them made a movie half as good as No Holds Barred. What's some bland piece of shit?
Seriously, dude. I mean, it's like, Cena's movies are so bad. Like, I went into the Marine, you know, I saw that direct on video or whatever. It was in the theaters for a few minutes. But I just remember watching it and having zero expectations. And still being disappointed.
And it's just, it's boring as shit. It's like they're, and then they try to do these movies like these, I guess, prestige pictures. And
well,
it's like,
you imagine
know.
If these, oh, go ahead.
No, you finish.
Could you imagine if they spent the amount of money they spent on the Marine on No Holds Barred?
It would have been awesome. The only thing, and I mean, honestly, there's a lot of stuff I like in it, you know, and I mean, I'll say this sincerely, you know, because I love stuff like Bloodsport and Kickboxer, you know, and there was like a good Bloodsport type movie in there.
Yeah.
I told somebody, I love the movie it wanted to be.
You know, it would be great if you had a time machine, you could kidnap Robert Patrick and take him back in time and cast him in No Holds Barred as the villain.
You know, Kurt Fuller in that movie is so insane, and the thing is, the funny thing is, he doesn't own that network.
I think I said it was kind of like when you watch Karate Kid 3, and you're basically wondering, how's this guy keeping his job on this?
Well, I kept asking, I was like, you know, call the police. Like, you know, he tries to have a woman raped, and I mean, Kurt Fuller, I don't know, and maybe you'll notice this when you watch the movie, Kurt Fuller gave off an air of sexual menace, like I thought he was going to have sex with Zeus at any time.
Oh, man. Now I'm going to have that sitting in the back of my head when I'm watching it.
No, it's even worse, the joke we had about, especially how he specifically set up the whole woman to basically try to semi-seduce Hulk Hogan's character, Rip. It's like, no, you had to do the Kurt Fuller. I can't do the Kurt Fuller.
Okay, basically he's like this. How could you fail seducing him? Okay, I'll do it. All right, Rip, you stay on your side of the bed.
Real quick, Vic.
And then we decided that Kurt Fuller would fail to do it, then Zeus said, I'll seduce him! And I think if Hulk Hogan and Zeus had sex, it would destroy the planet.
It would rip a hole in the space-time continuum.
Yeah, like circa 1988, when Hulk Hogan's at the height of his powers.
I like the fact that he has two high-end yuppie yes-men, two lackeys. And eventually, like, oh dear me, this place is just full of ruffians. I can never get past this whole wrestling thing.
And then Stan Hansen pops his head out of the bathroom stall.
That was my favorite cameo in the whole movie, was Stan Hansen.
A tiny wanger.
Joe
LaDuke. Oh, yeah, they had Jaws LaDuke in it.
And I'm trying to think of who else. There's a bunch of just, like, people that would just pop up here and there for a few seconds, and you're like, hey! Bill Eady was in there.
Yeah, he played Jake Bullitt.
And speaking of popping up, just the whole limo scene.
Oh, yeah, like, he's trying to kidnap him, and I like the fact that, if you'll notice, Rip has different types of, like, he has his business spandex.
And he has his formal red and black.
He has his, he has, like, his relaxing spandex, which is blue and white. Then he has his funeral spandex, which is black and white.
Yeah, got to class it up a little bit.
Like I said, if you go into it and just expect for the middle part to be a little boring because it does have pacing problems.
Yeah, that's the one thing. When Owen Hart died, I was disappointed that nobody showed up in character to his funeral.
Ends abruptly, too.
It had that big scene, which I'm pretty sure that was, like, the biggest scene in the movie, when he knocked Zeus from the balcony into the ring.
The ultimate high spot.
And the funny thing is, at the time I was watching this seemed so crazy, and then ECW did it twice here.
Yeah, that's... I know you love ECW, but I will never forgive them for killing that spot.
I can see ECW for what it is. You know, it's like my drunk dead daddy. I love him, but I know he was a drunk.
Right.
They did so much stupid shit in those last few years. And then the WWF did it with Big Show chokeslamming Undertaker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember
that
time? There was this episode of Raw when Kane and Undertaker actually broke the ring. Do you remember that?
I don't refresh me. I have a vague memory of it.
They were wrestling each other on Raw, and Kane grabbed Undertaker by the throat, chokeslammed him, and it wasn't fancy or anything, but one of the support boards snapped. And again, this might have just been a gimmick for the show, but I don't know. See why they would put dead air on the show for like 6 minutes.
Well, that is how WWE is now.
Zing!
All right, man. Well, it looks like I said, get back to me when you see No Holds Barred.
Will do.
Okay, I guess we gotta go. I've actually made it through the show. I'm feeling a little better now. All right, man. I'll catch you next week.
All right, man. Later.
All right. Play us out, Neil.
All right.
Neil, go ahead and share the link on Facebook and Twitter, okay?
Okay.
Bye-bye.